The backlash against feminism is the subject of a new book by Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Susan Faludi. She says feminism is being blamed for women's burnout and depression, and you can get the message in recent movies, self-help books, advertisements, and TV shows. She says the way the Clarence Thomas hearings have been handled is a good example of the backlash against feminism. I asked Faludi what's been eating at her about the hearings.
Oh, it's all eating at me. I mean, it's hard to single one thing out. But one thing in particular, I mean, what seems to be forgotten in all this is the backdrop that we should remind ourselves is that the EEOC's abysmal record in even investigating, much less combating, sexual harassment or discrimination. And that's something that's gotten no attention at all. I mean, regardless of whether Thomas or Anita Hill is telling the truth and who said what to whom, the fact remains in this country that the EEOC sat by and sat on its hands as discrimination soared and sexual harassment more than doubled in the decade. The women I interviewed for the book and also as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal, as we're doing these reaction stories on sexual harassment, talk about waiting more than a year just to get the EEOC to even act on their complaints, and women who've told me that then the EEOC officers tell them, well, there's really nothing we can do. Maybe we'll talk to him and then just tell him not to do it again.
Now, in your new book, you say that women are getting a mixed message. On the one hand, the message is, hey, the battle's won. Women have never had it so good. What's the other half of the message?
Well, the other half of the message is you girls have won your true equality and now you're truly miserable, that women's liberation is to blame for all women's woes. It's a vindictive message of, well, you ladies made your bed, now go lie in it alone. And this message is manifested in countless ways, from the barrage of news stories about how liberated women are succumbing to man shortages, infertility epidemics, record depressions, to downright silliness like a Nivea cream ad that said that the price of success for career women has been wrinkled skin.
Do you see what you call this anti-feminist backlash as something new? Or is this something that's been there all along?
No, well, it's depressingly enough, it seems to surface not just in American history, but throughout history, whenever women have made a few gains toward achieving equality. In the late 19th century, after the first wave of feminism, a backlash of very similar dimensions rose up in the culture. We heard media and politicians denouncing liberated women as criminals against humanity. A sort of similar crisis of masculinity was much debated, and there was groups similar to the men's movement today cropped up. There was a man shortage study that claimed that college-educated women had a 28% chance of getting a man. Now it's down to 20%, so I guess we're not making progress. And there was an anti-abortion movement that sprung up. Most people aren't aware that abortion was legal in this country until the late 19th century backlash in which a very militant group of men, mostly, were successful in convincing state governments to ban abortion and convincing the federal government to ban the distribution of birth control for the first time ever.
As a journalist, what has your approach been to trying to debunk some of the myths of the backlash?
Mm-hmm. Well, I did approach it far more as a journalist than a feminist theorist, which I am not. I can make no claims to being. And the whole book started out as a story taking a closer look at that infamous Harvard-Yale marriage study, the one that said that women are more likely, well, that was presented in the media as if it said that women were more likely to be killed by a terrorist than marry. It was a study that the media seized on and wound up on the front pages across the country and traumatized so many single women. And what was stunning to me was that, I mean, it didn't take any great investigative powers to make a single phone call to the Census Bureau and find out that there was no man shortage. There was a woman shortage. Few more phone calls turned up the rather pertinent information that that the study had all kinds of flaws, that it was an experimental study based on an unrepresentative sample. Yet what was interesting to me was that it continued to make the rounds in the press regardless of, you know, no matter how many times it was debunked. And when I turned to the other popular claims about women in the 80s, whether it was the so-called, you know, rising toll of infertility among career women, or claims that working women were mommy tracking or bailing out of the workforce, or claims that single women's mental health was deteriorating at an alarming rate, the same pattern. These were clearly myths that had scant evidence to support them, yet they continued to be marketed because they spoke to anxieties and fears about women's independence.
One of the things you examined was how women's clothing has changed in the past decade, and one of the places you look at is Victoria's Secret. Victoria's Secret, right?
Right.
Which is a mail order, well, there's also stores, but it's a mail order and chain that sells women's underwear. Why is that of interest to you? What does that have to say about, you know, women's lot in the 90s?
Mm-hmm. Well, what was interesting was, again, here we had yet another backlash myth that women are so perturbed by how they're so upset by the way that feminism has taken away from their femininity by forcing them to wear dress for success suits, that they are now donning, you know, Victorian-style lingerie, bustiers, teddies. This is a message that was put forth not by women. If you go back and look at the stories, you never see a quote by a real woman. It was put out by the Intimate Apparel Council, which happens to be a board made up exclusively of male heads of lingerie companies. And this was put out in this. They had a huge public relations splash. I mean, it was quite consciously done. Sent out a mass mailing, and lo and behold, you know, a week or so later, you saw these stories in these trend stories, sometimes word for word, just lifted from the press release. What I found in doing the reporting was that Victoria's Secret's success was largely not in, well, two things. The group that buying these lingeries and buying the Victorian lingerie was largely men. And second, what women were buying in Victoria's Secret are these rather comfortable, cotton underwear that were on sale at the front counter. And the other sort of untold lingerie story was that in the 80s, Jockey for Her, a male. Men's underwear that was sort of retooled for women, but it was very comfortable and didn't fall apart in the wash and was the actual size that it claimed to be. When that was launched in the early 80s, it became an overnight, you know, sensation, became developed the largest market share in the country, actually in the world. Yet none of these other fashion lingerie designers jumped on the bandwagon. They were not interested even in this great, what would seem like an obvious marketing bonanza, because apparently it didn't fit their notions of how women should be or look.
What is it within this backlash that has affected you most personally?
Hard question to answer. I'm in two ways. I mean, one, I'm a journalist, and so I sort of cringe when I see these stories, because, you know, I can see very easily how they get put out there through the pressures of time, through the desire to, you know, write the story that one's editor wants, or to, the whole notion of trend journalism, which became so popular in the 80s, where you take three examples and, declare a trend. And so it's really made me reevaluate be very careful about the way I do my reporting. The other thing is, as just a woman in America who's subject to the same cultural, the same barrage of cultural signals that all women faced in the 80s, I too internalized much of the message that, single women who don't marry are destined to a life of misery, that if one doesn't hurry up and have a child on the, at the dot of 23, that all is lost. And one of the things that was helpful for me in working on this book was to sort of demystify and take and dismantle these messages by simply looking at the reality of women's lives, which is unfortunately rarely done in journalism that purports to report on women's conditions.
Susan Faludi is the author of Backlash: The Undeclared War Against Women. This is Fresh Air.